This is the 15th of October, 1978, Santa Fe, New Mexico, and we're having a session with Bartholomew. Good evening, Master.
Good evening. And again, my very deep love to my beloved friends to the South, and I feel it all as well, and I rejoice that that is so.
We thought that perhaps we'd begin with asking you for a summation of the two tapes we've had on guilt, which gave us two different perspectives on the problem. I think the first one dealt more with how to cope with guilt when it is a stumbling block to the aspirant. And in the second case, you pointed out the positive value of guilt, that is, guilt in the sense of consciousness, is something that needs to be attended to.
Right. All right. So the first thing that I really want made very clear is there is no reason for you to feel guilty. And the reason that this is so is goes back to the main thrust of everything that I say on the deepest level. Understand that when I answer questions like this, I answer on varying levels because the people hearing the tapes will be at varying levels of understanding and openness. Most of you will end up being on the deepest level of awareness and will understand me when I say, right now, this moment, you stand totally and utterly guiltless. I don't care what you have done, you are guiltless. The you that is you is utterly free of guilt and remains so and has always remained so. The part of you that feels the guilt is the part of you that believes in the validity of your ego. It believes in your illusory ego self, and therefore it feels reason to have guilt. So remember, this is a two-level statement that I make. On the one hand, guilt is helpful because it points out to you what areas you are worried about. It gives you an opportunity to bring those areas into consciousness and ask yourself the question, do I want to surrender my own small desires in order to fulfill the greatest desire in me, which is to be free of guilt and to be full of joy? And if you can look on that guilty feeling in that light, it will be an extremely useful tool for you. I will give you a warning. If you fall over into the abyss and spend time worrying about past guilts and past problems until you are in a state of darkness, you will have done no good at all, and my statement would have been proven false. By that I mean that it has not helped you to in the slightest consider guilt in your mind. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
It is all a matter of how well you use this tool. But the statement must be made again and again. Seen from the God self, there is nothing to be guilty for. God does not participate, does not uphold, does not believe in the illusions of the world that you have created, which means he gives no validity to all of your guilty games. Of course, he gives no validity to any of your happy games either. You see, there's no validity to either one of those. The only validity that he stands under, the only source upon which he will give his stamp of approval, is that comes from the deepest source, and that only lies in the realm of real truth and has nothing to do with this fluctuating world of change and illusion and coming and going and rising and falling. So I did want to make that very clear, that on the deepest level, you stand utterly guiltless, and you will become free of your ego when you see this truly, when you truly observe that you are guiltless now and you have always been, that the other illusion was a great and strange hallucination in some deep way. And this is what you will see when you awaken. I won't go into it further, but that is the truth. It will appear to you as a grand hallucination, all the rising and falling and permutations of your illusory ego existence will become as nothing to you. They will become as fantasies, as phantoms that passed in the night. And you will see that there was no reason to feel guilty, and there was no reason to feel not guilty. There was no reason for any of it. And this will be your perception. So hold to that. Use guilt as the tool to bring you into mind of saying, am I in harmony with my own Tao? Am I in harmony with the One? Am I in a state of understanding and use whatever tools are yours to become free. But do not use guilt in order to entrap yourself and others into further pain and remorse.
Mm-hmm.
Simply use it as a way of saying, I see that in this, I believe in this illusion. I believe it. The panic of guilt is you believe it. That is the fear of guilt. You believe that you have done something worth feeling guilty about. And as we've talked about it before, it goes back to the beginning statement that fear is what rules the ego. The world and the earth plane is ruled by fear. Fear of attack, fear of retaliation, fear of your own attacking of others, and the reciprocal attack from others upon yourself. And it is a complete cyclical thing that goes on and on and on. And this is what produces the feelings of guilt. You know deeply within you that you are acting against the deepest will of yourself and of God, which is for total love and harmony. You know this, and you respond in this way. The thing to get a hold of is to realize that when you can start putting aside your small mind, your small will, your small desires, and start asking your vast will to run your life, that you are really at last in touch with your own real will.
Mm-hmm.
That is the key to all this. If you can once realize that there are not two wills, but only one will, and that you are indeed moving with that one will, you will begin to really move out of old patterns. But it takes a moment of understanding of that, because you now have the feeling that there are two things. You know, to go back to our illustration of guilt, there is the person who has a desire to do something that they know is going to hurt another person.
Right.
All right, now their first desire is to not hurt anybody, but
true,
but to still continue to do what they want to do. That is one level of will. But underlying that level of will, if they would only be the kind of person who is developing the sensitivity to their deepest movements of being, you see, what we're asking for is to develop the deep movements within your being of real God thought, of real God love, of real God power, all right? That's what we're asking you to develop. And the persons who are beginning to develop that attunement with that will easily see, with very little problem, they will see, ah, I see the problem. The surface is very much desired of this particular adventure. And actually, to tell you the truth, I'm not going to bother with that because I realize that that's going to cause a lot of pain and suffering, and that isn't my real desire. My real desire is to be a part of love and peace, and there is no peace to be found for me on that level. Once you begin to realize it's in your own best interests, if you will, once you decide it's in your own best interest to get to the deepest parts of your being and start merging with that peace, once you really begin to believe that, then you start to move in harmony. And my job is to convince you that it's your best interest, that it really is in your best interest to forego all of that surface manipulative desire pattern, not by stopping doing it. That doesn't stop anything. Stopping doing things doesn't. If you realize, and if you've been paying attention to what I've said, it is a rare time when I say to anybody, don't do that. Isn't that true?
Very.
I do not say that. And the reason I don't say that is stopping people from doing action is not the answer. That is not where the importance lies. The importance lies in getting them to do whatever action they particularly want to do. Go on, do it, and reap your karma, and you will, you know. Remember, karma works on one level when you're still working on the ego. We've talked about this before. When you're still working in the realm of ego, karma works. If you do bad, you'll get bad. If you do good, you'll get good. That is a true statement, all right?
Mm-hmm.
That's operative. But while all that is operating, going on and on, it's infinite road. What I am asking of all of you is to continue that if you have to. Of course you have to. That's all you can think of to do. But to begin this process of going within and digging into that deep core of peace and wisdom and joy and start pulling out some of those answers. Start pulling out some of that power that will eventually permeate the whole field of action. Do you see?
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm really seeking. So, on one level, whatever action you feel inclined to do, there isn't really much you can do about it. Go ahead and do it. and reap your destiny. Don't expect people to love you when you do unloving things. Don't expect people to understand when you're cruel and ugly. They will respond with cruelty and ugliness unless they are one of those rare people who can love in spite of it. And there are very few of those. So whatever you give out, you will get back in some measure on some level. And understand that that is the destiny. But while that is going on, while you're entrapped in those bonds, begin this process now, today, and eventually you will free. You will free all the way up until your actions are smooth and peaceful and calm and full of power and knowing and wisdom and aid and succor and support. Until it wouldn't occur to you to act in a way that was not totally loving. It wouldn't occur to you. And that's not so far off for many of you. That's not so far off.
Would you elaborate on the method one follows to give over the small will, or surrender, I think is the word I want, to the greater will?
All right. Now, I would like to make a statement that you will not believe, most of you, but I want to say it. I want to, in your words, get it in the computer. All right? The fact is, there is but one will, and you know deeply within yourself that there is but one will. And that one will wills only the good, the true, and the beautiful. That one will wills only that, and acts only in that way. All right, now that is a statement that I want to begin every other statement as a preface to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in your mixed-up illusion, it seems so clear to you that you have different wills. What you were really looking at is a series of desires. You're looking at a rising and falling and chopped-up series of desires. They rise and they fall, and they rise and they fall, and they have a very choppy pattern to them. Most people don't observe this choppy pattern because they're not paying attention. But if you began to watch your desires, you would say, oh, this moment I want a cigarette. The next moment I don't want to smoke anymore. The next moment I want to go for a ride in the car. The next moment I really want to take a nap. The next moment I want to really get angry at so-and-so. The next minute I want to figure out a way to stop getting angry. The next minute I... so on.
Mm-hmm.
All right? If you're really watching the patterns that go on in you, you'll see this choppy, choppy business. All right. Now, you don't observe the choppiness, but I will tell you that the way to know whether you are in a divine flow is if there is a choppiness, a rising and falling, if there is a break and then a reoccurrence of a new one, you are working in the realm of desire. You are working on the wheel of karma. You are working on the wheel of cause and effect, and it rises and falls, and it has no meaning. When you begin to feel within yourself a continuity, a movement within your being through everything you do, through every thought you think, through every single nuance of your being, and this can be done, when you get in touch with that, then you'll know what I mean by the constancy of the presence of God and the lack of constancy in the chopped up desires. All right? Will is one. Will does not come in pieces. Will is one. Therefore, you must realize, if you believe that statement, that will is all and will is one, that anything that is chopped up to the degree that your individual desires lay out for you is not really will. It is a set of desires coming so rapidly, one after the other, that it seems to you that there is a power pushing them. In truth, it is a matter of projection, empty projection, one after the other, a rat-a-tat-tat situation, and there is no deep moving constancy in that at all. And be grateful that there isn't, because that is why it can be broken. If that rat-a-tat-tat feeling was really will, sir, you could never escape it. Never escape it, because will is one. And if that is really will, you will never get out of it. Do you see?
Yes.
There is but one will. And if all of this rising and falling is a part of that will, is a real reality in the will, If that is what is really upholding it, is the God will, then it will be yours forever. You will never cease to be in that state, and wouldn't that be hell? There is no reality upholding that vision. So, to go back to the question, the best way to begin to surrender is to keep reminding yourself over and over and over again, there is no power in this rising and falling and rising and falling, but within me I feel a constancy. All right? Everyone feels the continuance of the I. Everyone feels that they are in a state of continuation. Do you not feel in a state of continuation somewhere within you?
Oh, yes.
I mean, you feel that you have continued on from this day to the next, to the next, from last year onward, onward. There is a feeling and a knowing of a continuance within you. What is that? That continuous feeling has nothing to do with the rising and falling of all your thoughts as they come and they go, right? The come and the go on and on and on, but the feeling of the continuance continues. Now, what is that? So, the best way to pull yourself down into the deep knowledge of that continuing, ongoing, ever-present, never-ceasing I-ness is to keep feeling it. Mm-hmm. Is to keep attention grounded in that. And that is the simplest thing and the hardest thing, because what you want to do is to fly off with all of your myriad thoughts, with your myriad desires, with your myriad imageries, with all of these things. That is your desires, to move into that area and start to play. And that is the realm of creative fantasy. All right? And creative fantasy can be positive and negative. That's not what we're talking about. Through all of your thinking, you know there is someone observing the thinking. There is someone who is watching the thinker. There is someone who is watching the action. There is someone who is watching the performing.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you tell yourself, look, who is the constant one here? Who is this constant one amongst all of this? I feel the same today as I did yesterday. My life has changed. My emotions have changed. I've lost some things. I've gained some things. But the I-ness about me remains the same. I feel the same.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that I am the same. And the truth is, your I am is the same. So, the constant remembrance and reminding of oneself day in and day out, as night comes on, as sleep goes on, when you open your eyes in the morning, ask yourself, where is that I? Where is I? Where is that sense of I-ness again? And begin to know that as your familiar companion, as the one who walks with you through all of your days and your nights, who sleeps with you in the night and who walks with you within the day. If you're a Christian, this is called the Holy Spirit. If you're a Buddhist, this is called Buddha Mind. Whatever you are, know that there is a word for it, but don't get stuck with the word. Get to the feeling of the reality of that. That is the reality of it all. So, the question is, how do you surrender? Well, it's very difficult to give you any ritual, because, of course, it's going to be different for all of you. But I can assure you that the way will show you the way. And the beginning step is to keep asking yourself very, very quietly, where is that I of me? Where is that I of me? There is a continuing, ongoing, ever-knowing, ever-present I of me. I know that because I feel it. That is the one thing you do know. Everything comes and everything goes. A man who has lost all of his limbs, who is utterly rotted away in illness, who has not a dime, who has not a friend, he still knows that he is an I. He has an I-ness there about him that does not have anything to do with the limbs and the body and the friends and the environment. There is an I-ness that permeates. And that is what I would suggest. If you're a Christian, if you are prone to that, then I say practice the presence of God. That is the way to put it, all right? Practicing the presence of God. This I-ness, which the I is one. I and the Father are one. Be still and know the I am that is God. I am that I am. All these are true statements. Permeate your mind with the knowledge that what you really seek is union, is not even a union because it's already taken place, but an awareness of the existing ongoing union of your separate I with the greater I. I hope I've made this clear, because this is the most important way to begin your deep walk, which is to be aware that there is a part of you that is always constant and that is the same through all events. And so once you finally realize that this is so, you will be less and less prone to allowing your mind to move off into different areas. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, it reminds me of the Ramana's exhortations on who was asking the question and who was thinking this thought.
This is the purest, this is the easiest, this is the most direct route. Now, those of you who cannot do this, fine. Approach me through our friends or so on. Be frank about your limitations. Share with me some of your feelings about this, and we will go from there. I must put this in, though, as the highest form of the practice of the presence of God. Practice of the presence. Practice of the I. The constant questing for the I-ness to reveal itself. That's what we're talking about when we say concentrate on the space within. That's all that is. It's just a matter of concentrating on the space within, which is another way of saying the I that is within you, and it will give forth its mystery. And that is true, it will. And that is the I-ness. And if you can, as you look out in the field of the world, realize how much is space, that is I-ness. Keep reminding yourself. That's all it is. It's a matter of remembrance. Constantly remembering, reminding yourself that you are not what you think you are. That things are not as they seem to be. That your calling is higher and more spatial and more beautiful and more vast and more uplifting than this limitation that you've placed on yourself. And this is what I would call surrender. In any way that you can, surrender as many moments of your day. For example, you will finally get to the place where you realize you're making a choice moment to moment. Shall I fantasize or shall I stick with the I? Do you see what I'm saying? You will come into awareness of the choice here, that you will have a choice, and you will be very, very prone to go off into the fantasy, because there's a certain amount of vibrational delight that you can get from that. But realize that staying with the pursuance of the I source, staying with the presence of God, staying with that and holding to that to such an extent that soon you will overcome that boundary, and you will be moving in the stream that only yearns. And that's when we get in the realm of the real seeker, the one who really seeks union with the divine. They're really in the motion of that. They've overcome that fragmented desire. Do you see? They've overcome that fragmented moment of, oh, shall I think this thought about tomorrow and this book, or shall I fantasize this conversation, or shall I pick up Reader's Digest, or whatever? They'll have a choice, all right? And they'll say, no, I won't. I'll stay with this. Just this once, I'll stay with this. And the more moments of choice of staying with this, over and over, they build a greater and greater power within them. Then the velocity is moving, ever increasing, every time you make the choice for God, every time you make the choice for awareness rather than fantasy, rather than illusion, you're building your power. You're building, you're calling up and using the power that is latent within you, that is waiting to carry you to the top. Mm-hmm. And that's what you have to do, is to begin to constantly move with that and realize that each thought is a choice. What shall I choose? Shall I choose? And be aware of what you're doing. And if you choose the fantasy, realize that it's you, and don't blame God. Don't blame God. You know, people say, if God wants me, why doesn't he just swoop down and take me? Because you don't want him, that's why. The day that you want him more than you want your fantasies, more than you want your arguments, more than you want your bad humors, more than you want all these other things, when you really decide that you're not into feeling revengeful, when you're not into adding to agitations, when you're not into that type of world anymore, but you're really into the world of wanting to feel the I and the God within, then you're on your way.
Now this eye, sense of the eye is equivalent to the sense of the divine will?
They're all one. You cannot feel the divine without feeling will, because they are the same thing. Divine will and the divine presence are there. The reason that you feel the divine presence as power is because power and will are one. And it is a feeling of power. When you begin to feel your I-ness, you will begin to sense the power. There's power there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's moving power. It doesn't just stay and dissipate. It's moving. And it can move out. And it can expand. And it does a lot of things that you'll discover. But yes, that's why. Because will and power are the same thing.
I see. Well, I think that that answers the question.
All right.
And perhaps we could go on to something that's not directly related to this.
All right.
Which is, we are wondering how one should go about raising children if the parent or parents are not affiliated with any organized religion, if they're not, for example, churchgoers, then how should one raise the children so that the children are imbued with a sense of the spiritual purpose?
Well, really, the only way to best do that is to do it. And that means to talk about it. That means to make it a very obvious part of your dialogue. When a child is having a problem, how do you tell them to solve it? If you tell them to solve it by the old ways of manipulating people, or by withdrawing, or by getting angry, or by whatever, if you're using the old patterns, then that's what you're teaching them.
Right.
If, on the other hand, you're saying to them, all right, now look, this is a problem. This is an ego situation. You're going to run into a million of them in a million different faces. I would tell you now how to relieve yourself from that anxiety, and that is to go within yourself, little one, and find that place of peace that is within you, and start staying with that. And if you just make them very aware at the earliest ages that there is a space of light within their being that they can go to and call on all of their lives, that can be counted on. You see, the world cannot be counted on, sir. Did you know that?
Yes,
the world cannot be counted on. And some people will say, oh yes, but I have this beloved, and this beloved can be counted on. And I say, even if that beloved is extraordinarily devoted to you, which is not usually the case on the earth plane, but even if that is true, someday that beloved will die, or you will die, and your beloved is left. There is always a time at which you will be left. If you have not cultivated within yourself this communion, you've forgotten how to commune with the God within. You've forgotten that that was a reality that used to sustain you. And if you can teach a child that the greatest sense of wisdom and peace and security comes from beginning to commune with that God within, and teaching them, that's all you need to do, sir, is just to begin the process of teaching them how. And then, when situations arise, instead of solving them or suggesting situations, solving answers on the same level of action, reaction, karma, and so forth, time, spatial actions, answers, if you don't deal there and deal on this deep level, then you'll be showing them that this is reality.
Mm-hmm.
And you will be building in them the confidence that they will take with them wherever they go, that they don't need anybody else to answer their questions because they have an authority of wisdom within. So you just build the process, and it goes on throughout their whole life. And once children are able to do this, you know. Children are able to go within and do things. But the trouble is that they look at what goes on around them, and they see very clearly that nobody else is answering their questions this way. Other people are running to books, or they're turning on the television, or they're asking other people, or they're arguing, and they're fighting, and so forth. You see, they see this chaos in the world around them, and so they just decide that that's how they have to make their decisions, too. Their decisions have to be made without.
Right.
So they know they don't bother to go within, because nobody's telling them to go within. But if you can tell them that the answers lie within, and they have to find out for themselves, they have to get in touch with that, and that you will do your best to help them, and if you will share with them the way that you do it, if you're doing it, then things will come together. In other words, if you're living it, they will live it. If you're not living it, you're not going to help them. And then it doesn't matter what you do. You know, you can go to all these churches and eventually they will come to a stumbling block of belief, and they won't have anything within themselves to match up with.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be an experiential within, a feeling within, that is free of guilt, that is free of any kind of your being the last. You see, you can't be phony about it. You can't on the one hand say, you have to go within and find the answers. Then they do. They come up with the answer and you say, wrong.
Right.
I mean, so your life has to, but you see, most parents on the earth plane cannot resist saying, wrong.
Yeah.
They cannot risk that.
Yeah, they want to be in control.
They want to be right. And so they simply cannot allow wrong. They can't stop that process. And let the child find out, and let the child free to develop its own right-wrong system of watching. What would be helpful is to say, all right, follow that up and see what happens. Allow that child that experience. If they start young enough, then they won't be going into areas that are extremely dangerous.
You know, how is that?
Well, there are certain areas, for example, in a teenager's life, you can't allow a teenager to do some things.
Right.
All of a sudden, boom. They go within and they see an answer, and you know full well that tragedy lies that way. You can't sit back and let tragedy take over,
mm-hmm.
because they haven't developed that process in within themselves fully enough yet,
right.
Do you see? But in a young child you can, because so much of their life is confined by your judgment anyway, and they know that. You know, so much of the life is confined by going to school and so on. They don't have a lot of freedom of movement. And so, as a young child, they can begin to work on this process without the great risk that comes in a teenager, for example,
right.
who will go in and perhaps, instead of hitting the great wisdom within, will hit the great desire within.
Right.
And just decide to follow that out, feeling that they have your approval and so on, and putting yourself in a very difficult situation. I think with an older child, if you have not lived in this free state of encouraging them to rely on the wisdom within. You see, it takes a very big parent to do that, because most parents really think they're right, that they themselves are right, and that the child is wrong. You know, the whole child-parent relationship is based on that the child is ignorant and you have to teach them.
Right.
And so, you see, this is asking for a lot on the part of a parent. But if in the case of an older child who has not had this kind of a background, I think the thing to do is to just be very frank with them and just say, well, I can't give you a complete go-ahead on a lot of things because I too am caught. You see, a very frank statement of your own lack of wisdom in certain areas, and going into it together with them and saying, let's both think upon it and see if we can't really touch that area of wisdom within us. Turning it over all the time, you know, The power within knows the correct movement. The power within knows the correct action. But it takes practice in order to get in that. It takes all that we've talked about in the past on this tape.
Mm-hmm.
It takes that degree of surrender. And really, what we could say surrender is choosing not to let your mind decide, but choosing to let the I-ness within you decide. That's really what surrender is, you know. Is not allowing your mind to do what it usually wants to do, to formulate ideas and act upon them,
right.
but putting that whole thing aside and saying, no, I don't know the answer. I think I know the answer, therefore I don't know the answer, because I'm still thinking. So I'm putting this all aside and I'm saying, all right, light within, show me the way. What do you say inside? What is that within me? What does it say? And then beginning to trust that, to act on it, to see how it works, to try it out, to see if you can't get in touch with a movement, a feeling within yourself that lends you to go one way or another. It's not terribly mysterious, sir. It's just terribly scary. And the reason it's scary is people think that the mind has to decide how to do everything. And when your mind stops deciding and you've decided to put another faculty in charge, which is this intuitive I faculty in charge, there is a period of tremendous fear. Well, what if I make a mistake? What if that's wrong? What if I look foolish? I mean, you know, it goes on and on and on.
Won't be any worse than what happens when you're following your mind.
But people don't know that, sir. I mean, you perhaps know that, but a lot of people don't know that. They think that their minds are very clever. They think that their minds are making wonderful choices. Oh, I mean, they look at their lives and their lives are in chaos, but they continue to think, what a wonderful job my mind has done. They don't stop and say, has my mind made the right choices? Have I really made the best choices for me and for my ones that I am in charge of? Have I really made the best choices or not? People don't like to assess their lives like that, sir. Right. Oh, no, it's much easier to just say, oh, yes, everything is fine. And if it's not fine, it's the other person's problem or it's God's problem and it's nothing to do with me and tomorrow will be better and so on and on. So I feel we should stop this tape. I'm sorry that it's so short, but I do feel that there are many things pressing on me at this moment that require my attention. I do ask your forgiveness. Please go ahead and send this, even though it's a shorter tape, to our beloved friends. And then perhaps if we could find time during the week at an advantageous time, we'll carry on.
Certainly. And thank you, Bartholomew.
Right.